Hey, welcome to The Weekend. It's time for Group Chat, the place where everyone comes together to talk all things pop culture, whether it's music.
Yeah, Beyonce has 11 nominations.
I think that's aggressive.
including album of the year.
I am happy that she is getting some play.
Mm-hmm. Movies and TV.
In comedy, like, we had memes, we had GIFs, we had people being Rickrolled, we had That's What She Said, we had, you know, like, we had all that stuff. So I think it's also just
it's
where
like
we are in
part
time.
Part of the trend, yeah.
How do you know when to move on? How do you know when something's stale?
How long do we do Chuck Norris jokes for?
Or sports moments that have everyone talking.
If you're watching a television show and somebody's wearing a Bills jersey, like, they're going to notice that and zoom in on that Bills jersey and be like, I like this show, I like these characters. Somebody who doesn't really necessarily care about the Bills, or maybe they follow a different team, they're not going to see that, they're not going to have that same connection, because their perceptual ability is just, it's a different set of references.
Group Chat brings you all the pop culture action with sharp insight, fun debates, and a whole lot of laughter. Coming up right after this.
Hello and welcome to Group Chat. I am your guest host, Joe Cannizzaro. I am the executive fundraising producer here at BTPM, filling in for Bentley, because this is a Father's Day special, and we are all dads here today. And today I'm really excited to welcome our guest. We have Adam Zyglis, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist at The Buffalo News, Rahsaan Dhillane, Vice President of Corporate Culture at Evergreen Health, a doctoral candidate at Syracuse University researching Black fathers raising children with autism, an advocate for LGBTQ+ and adoptive families, and my coworker, Christopher Heisey, Assistant Director of Creative Services at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Welcome, guys.
Thanks,
nice to have you here.
Great to be here.
So today we're sharing our own unique takes on being a dad, from the joys and challenges of fatherhood to how dads show up in pop culture and what Father's Day looks like, from the perfect gift to the ultimate dad joke. But first, we're all fathers here, so we'll go around the room. First, Adam, how many kids do you have and what ages are they?
So I have two kids. My daughter just turned 9 and my son is 11.
Nice. So you're chasing sports?
Right now I'm in the travel sports zone. Both kids are in travel sports, and it's a whole different world.
Yes, it is. Yep, I remember that. Yep. And Christopher.
Yes.
How many kids you got, and what ages are they?
I have one daughter, and she just turned 6 months last week.
Fresh.
So, yes. Yeah. It's been the longest decade of my life.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Rahsaan, how many kids do you have, and what ages are they?
I have four, ages 8, 8, 6, and 6.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yes.
So what are you
it's
chasing?
A lot.
What are you?
Everything. It never ends.
Sports, dance, like everything.
Sports, swimming.
Wow.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. We're across the board.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it with. I mean, one was just a handful for me and my
takes
wife.
Takes a village.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Takes
right.
a village.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure does. Defense.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. I have one daughter, one kid, and she just graduated from UB with a bachelor's in neuroscience.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been saying she's been smarter than everyone in the house for a really, really long time.
She finally proved it.
She proved it when she was like 4. But but no, the certificate says it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's moving on to her master's. She has a master's in neuroscience coming up.
Wow.
Excellent.
Wow.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. So we're going to talk about some wins and fails and some, you know, unfiltered realities of fatherhood. So Adam, we'll start with you. What are some of the wins that you've experienced over time or just recently, whatever?
I mean, I feel like there's not really one moment, but it's just the little things, like getting to a phase where, you know, they're starting to be self-sufficient, those type of things. And like I mentioned, this is our first year with them in travel baseball and softball at the same time. And we love it where it's so many life lessons in the sport. You know, I played a little bit growing up, but not at the intensity level it is now. So a lot of it is working through some of these issues that you can apply to life through your sports. And, you know, our son, for instance, was pitching when he was younger, but the emotional struggle of if you're walking kids or if they're cranking home runs off of you and your team's not helping you out, it's that period of time you have to like just accept failure. You know, it's a sport of like saying it's all right, we got to just learn from it and move on, or just it's not in my control, I did my job. And there's been some key moments along the way that it was like, it's what he did, not what I did, but it's all the work, the mental work that went into that coaching, the mental coaching. And he actually is an amazing pitcher these days, but it's not so much the good innings. It's like we're away at a tournament this last summer and faced off against a top team in Michigan. So the we knew right away, like, this is going to be tough. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a buzzsaw. And we saw the kids on the other team were all lining up, you know, like in unison, swinging to his like warm up pitches like Cobra Kai, you know. So this was, they're all like a foot taller than our team. So I'm like, oh, great. You know, my son's starting pitching. And he was throwing strikes. We got through the first couple of innings. But then as soon as they got it, you know, his speed, they were cranking it. And this is what's going to happen on these bigger teams. A year prior to that, it would have really rattled him up there. And, you know, he's got a great coach and a great program that just like, you know, worked through it. And he was unfazed and completely cool as a cucumber, man. He just was, that was a proud moment. Like, you know, this is, he's just doing his thing. You know, he was resetting. And that was, you can apply that to life in so many different ways.
Yeah.
So amazing, it's those little victories.
To watch those little things happen
right
over the years, isn't it?
Yeah. Small little victories are big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True.
Christopher, I know you're pretty fresh at this, so what do you got, man?
You know, I think for me, if I had to think of one like really big high off the top of my head, it was the first time I got my daughter to sleep on me all by myself.
Sure.
You know, those first few weeks, she wanted nothing to do with me, and it was all about wanting her mom, and I totally got that. But that first night, I remember sitting with the Christmas tree on and everything, and I was holding her, and then I could see the eyes slowly just start to go. I was like, oh, I think I'm going to do it. And then the eyes closed.
Yeah.
And I looked at my wife, and I just started sobbing. Because it was just relief. I was so happy. Mm-hmm. And I did it. I can do this. This is great. And she's like, it's okay. I'm like, I'm just so happy right now. And, That's such a great, powerful moment to kind of feel like, you know, for the first time, like, I can do this, you know, this really empowering moment. It was really awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Well, congratulations on that, too, because that is a big step.
It really was.
Yep. Rasan, what are your wins?
That's an interesting question, because I was thinking about really a process. I think the win for my husband and I was the adoption process itself.
Yeah.
And really complicated story behind it. It's a long one. But being able to adopt children as a same-sex couple was a huge win. Being able to be legally married, huge win. And also our kids are very much connected to their birth families, which I think is an additional win.
Sure.
Because they understand where they come from. They have a connection to their birth families. We honor and respect the choice that they made. So our wins are kind of a process of just what our family represents. And, you know, having four kids, like, there's so many moments that I wish I could speak to, but it's like all a blur because they're so close in age, and you know, but thinking about, I guess, winning, that's what I kind of love about my story.
That's pretty great. My latest win, because they come and go, you know, throughout all 22 years, is just a couple weeks ago when my daughter graduated. And I was cool, and then they said they made this little speech about, you know, now it's official, and it was this whole thing, and I just broke down sobbing, man. And it was like, my wife was sitting next to me, she's like, what the hell, are you okay? Where'd that come from? And I'm like, oh, I'm all right, this is just too much, because the kid just worked so hard for so many years to get to that place, and then to see it all kind of come through, and she was so happy about it. So that was my latest. Any fails?
I mean, every day, which day you want to talk about.
Sure.
I mean, I feel like sometimes parenting is just like a, you know, it's just a practice in futility. I mean, you try and try, and then you get those wins, and it's great. I think I try to be as patient as I can, but I think there's times where I forget their kids. I forget what age they are, because they're just such smart, mature kids for their age. And, you know, if I, you know, get frustrated with, you know, they make a mistake, or, you know, I got to take a beat, and like, they're kids. So reminding myself, you know, I have those moments. But in terms of just something that's been like almost turned into like an inside joke with the family as a fail was during COVID, you know, we were trying to do everything in the house and in the property when we were just stuck inside. And we're trying to find ways to keep them busy. They're at that point really young. And I remember my daughter having, you know, a friend that had like a play set in the backyard. You know, we live in the city, so we don't have a ton of space, but enough space for one of those play sets. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to find one. So turned out everybody had the same idea in COVID. And you could not get like an outdoor playset for a period of, must have been 6 months to a year. So, you know, I kept on it. But then we, you know, you develop, you get into sports, you move on in a way. And I kind of forgot about it. And we never ended up doing it. Now they're just using the backyard as like a baseball softball diamond. Mm. But to this day, my daughter will be driving, and she'll be like, that's the place that you were supposed to get me. And
she never let you forget it.
Never let you forget. I'm like, oh, man.
So, Christopher, any fails?
I mean, it's hard.
And I mean, subtle fails. Subtle, like, yeah. You know what I mean? You know.
Colossal fails. Yeah. No, I mean, off again, the top of my head, everything, because she's so small, everything just revolves around sleep. You know, this morning was a particularly crazy morning for us. My wife had an 8 a.m. meeting, which was out of the norm. Wasn't normal for her.
Yeah.
She works from home, which is nice, but like, we're kind of running around trying to get the house ready. I'm trying to get ready to leave, and nanny's coming at 8:30, and 7:58, my daughter decided she wanted to try and go to sleep. So I'm like, I'm trying to listen because we had the concert announcement this morning I'm trying to listen to, and I got her to sleep, and after about 10 minutes, I put her in the crib, and she just, eyes open, started screaming. I went, oh, okay, well, this isn't going to happen. more to happen, and I still struggle with transferring her because she'll fall asleep, my arm's great, but getting her in the crib, she just sometimes just will not take it. So that's just kind of a fail, a subtle fail that you know I'm still working on.
And you haven't sat in the car yet after the kid fell asleep, and you just sit in the garage just letting that kid sleep in the chair.
No, she loves sleeping in the car, though, which is great.
Yeah, we do the driver on the block. We used to do that all the time.
I'm waiting for that to start to be a thing,
And Rasan, for you?
I was just going to say, wait till you start crawling out of the room, like when you you start
ready to sneak out like a ninja.
That's
I've been doing that. I did not realize how creaky our house is until it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and every floorboard makes the noise.
And Rasan, during like the COVID time, what was that like for you with four kids that young?
It was tough. My husband is also a principal, so he's in education, so he was home with all four kids the entire time. And when I tell you, I mean, him trying to, so many stories, but trying to homeschool them, so to speak, like in the basement, he had a nice little setup with like a dry erase board, and he was trying to get them, you know, doing little basic things and whatnot. But it was, it lasted one day, and then he was like, I'm done.
We had this like little owl school, we called it. Yeah. My wife was great about it. And we like tried to set up this like little system. We're trying to also work remotely.
Yeah.
And it lasted maybe a week, you know, we're just like, and then it just becomes management, you know, trying to manage them away from the screens as much as possible. Yeah. Cause that's, you know, all they kind of want to do during that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Just thinking way back, I don't know, my daughter was real little. You know, maybe like three or four. And I took her to we lived in Los Angeles for a while. I took her to Long Beach Grand Prix, and which is a car race. We were sitting out on this big bench, and I turned my head for a minute, and I looked back, and she was laying in the bushes, and there were these thorns on the bushes like this big, and one had gone like into her chin. And I was like, dude, I am just the worst dad, and my kid is bleeding. Holy crap, what have I done? But we cleaned it up, and it was all fine, and it's nothing. But that was just one of those things, man. You turn your head for a second. And boom.
Yes, that's happened.
And I imagine with four,
you
turn your head, all sorts of mayhem can
take
place.
They're all over the place. They're running all over the place. Yeah. You know, it's funny because we'll go to different like amusement park or, you know, public places, and we're always like counting them, like 1, 2, 3, like looking around like this, and we have all four, it's a lot, but things can happen very quickly.
Absolutely.
That's true.
So we'll move on to just the crazy world of social media. How do your kids handle social media? Do you let them do whatever they want in that world, or how do you got that set
up? I'm glad we see eye to eye on this, and we're very much you know, restrictive about all that stuff. We feel that we want to wait as long as possible. It's hard because we're swimming uphill, you know, we're swimming upstream with this.
Absolutely.
But we're one of there are some parent friends we have, but the majority of people in our age, you know, my son's 11, and a lot of the kids he's friends with have cell phones and social media accounts. We got none of that. You know, basically my daughter just got a Gizmo watch, and he's got one too, but it's just for communicating. You can send text messages and call.
Yeah.
They don't have their own devices, you know, and I think it's such a battle with technology and screens to begin with that we're not going there. We're going to fight it as long as we can. And we know as an adult, and it's part of my job to be on social media.
Sure.
But we know how addictive it is for us, let alone, you know, kids that, that don't have those impulse controls and their brains aren't fully developed. So they're not on it. We actually removed YouTube from all of our devices. Because they'll just go down the rabbit hole and end up finding crazy stuff. So my son is into video games and he's got the Switch, but we do monitor that a little bit. And he's got more of that gene where it's like addictive to him. My daughter's like, if we come in, we're guys, all right, time to turn it off. You know, my daughter's just like, boom. Where he's like, wait, just 5 more minutes, Dad. It's different personalities, but we're pretty sensitive to that, you know. So we try to lock it down. I just remember reading too, I was a computer science major, and I love technology, but I remember reading like a lot of these CEOs of these social media companies and of these tech companies, they don't have any of this in their home for their kids because they know how dangerous it is. So that's kind of where we're at. It's hard. We're going to lose the battle at some point, but we're fighting it.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a battle. Rahsaan, how about you? I mean, you got four kids running around.
Yeah,
it's easy to just plop them in front of a screen, right?
It can be very easy. Sometimes it's the go-to when you need a break.
Sometimes you got
to. You have to.
Yeah, right?
You have to.
Yeah.
You know, I think I like what Adam was saying, because for us, it's thinking about like their emotional relationship with technology as it stands now. Like, you know, how do they transition to and from it? You know, how connected they are to it. So we're very, they don't have devices in terms of cell phones or social media at this point. They're way too young. But I think, you know, kind of building up their social emotional selves first. Because once they do have access to it, you know, the flood of information and the things that they, you know, potentially can see, you know, they have to really be, you know, hopefully in a good place where they can even understand like what they're seeing. It's too much already. So.
Yeah.
And it's like it's like a education sort of zone we're in, where we're like telling them about it, showing them stuff, and, you know, giving them some education about, you know, AI, about like, you know, things that aren't real, like identifying what's true. Oof. So we're kind of doing all that before they even have their devices to kind of get them a little bit, you know. I don't want them to go in totally cold, and their friends have a lot of stuff that they're exposed to too, but I think it's constant education. You gotta be like the teacher at home all the time.
And Christopher, for you, two questions for you.
Sure.
Like, what's your plan, like what are you thinking, and then how has like your social media changed? Are you just like, all of a sudden is your algorithm all dads and diapers and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, okay. Well, so for the first one, I think along the same as Adam, like we understand we're definitely swimming uphill, and I can only imagine what it's going to be like in 15, 20 years when it's time for her to have cell phones or whatever's going to be next. But our plan is to try and keep her off social media as much as possible. Yeah. We have not posted anything about her on social media. I'm going to be posting about this. This will be the first time any of my followers know that I'm a dad, for that matter. So we want to do as much as we can to kind of understanding the what social media is and the dark side of it, and trying to, you know, shield as much as possible.
Sure.
For me personally, my algorithm, it's really funny how quickly it switched from like preparing to be a dad to like, hey, you're a dad and here's all these things. It's interesting though. I did kind of notice, maybe it's just was my algorithm, but my wife was getting a lot of sort of like positive affirmation kind of things about like, be a mom and it's great and it doesn't have to be perfect and this, that, and the other thing. And then my stuff was just basically like, you're a dad, congrats. Like, it wasn't, I was looked like, not that I needed the positive affirmations, but it was just kind of funny that like, it just wasn't, it wasn't out there, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. In my world, we got my daughter a regular phone, you know, with the little keyboard on it and stuff, when she had to walk back and forth from like elementary school, you know? And then she's 22 and she has no social media whatsoever. She has an Instagram that she puts her little cartoons up and stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
she wants nothing to do with social media. Yeah, that's and great. We are not allowed to post pictures of her on social, like she doesn't want any of that stuff. And I'm so thankful.
Good for her.
Yeah, that's crazy. Right.
I mean, you know, and even, you know, when she was younger, we were, you know, like, you know, she didn't want any part of it. And we thought, well, you know, with all the bullying and stuff that's going on in the world, she doesn't know what's happening.
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Say whatever the hell they want. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
She doesn't know what's going on. She's totally unaffected with it. She's just got her friend and they're all cool. And so we consider ourselves very lucky to have a kid and, you know, at 22, and she does not want her face out there. She's so funny.
That's great, though.
That's great.
Yeah, it's cool. And I don't even know, like how we got. Like, I can't even tell you how we got.
What's the secret?
We all need to know. We all
her personality.
Yeah,
maybe, but,
That's you know, great. That was it. And she just—that's just what she does now. What's the best parenting advice you've gotten, or maybe some that you can give to Christopher over here?
I mean, I don't know. It's like, maybe like just don't fall for the easy fix all the time, because I think it's tempting. Sometimes you kind of have to, but. You know, there sometimes the right path is the tougher path for the long term. If you start, think more of like a long term, and you're guiding these kids more than just like solving the immediate problem. And I think as a dad, sometimes we think we need to fix everything and we need to fix it now, instead of just sort of like being there emotionally and supportive and loving and like letting them work through it with your support. I think there's that we don't have to fix it right away all the time.
Yeah.
Try to be there for them emotionally and remember that their kids going through all they're going through. But yeah, I mean, it's also hard because I feel like I get humbled a lot as a parent. So it's hard for me to give advice.
Yeah. That's an understatement. Like,
you know, I think I know what I'm doing for 1 second and then all of a sudden I don't. Like with our daughter, she's totally different than our son. Like, we're like, he just was an easier baby and an easier kid. And we're like, we're so good at this. He sleeps great. And we did all the same things with her. And I'm like, why does this not work? So a lot of it is just, it's going to be challenging. And, but it's, so, you know, beyond the frustration, it's equally, if not more, rewarding. So,
Great. Rahsaan, how about you for a little advice from having four?
I would say take time for yourself too when you can. Because I think, you know, the gift and the burden of a father is that we want to fix things. We want to be the best fathers that we can be. We love and cherish and care for our families each and every day and try very hard to do that. And also, whatever outlets that you have or that you can lean into, take that time. And do that for yourself because it's so important. I've learned for myself.
That is great advice.
You know, that it's, that it's really important to just, you know, because sometimes we were so into the day-to-day and taking care of our families and being caregivers and present fathers and all these things that we sometimes forget about, you know, the self. And that helps us to be better for our kids.
Absolutely. Do that. That's the truth.
I totally feel that. I love listening to music. That's like my absolute favorite thing. And I did not realize how badly I missed it until I started volunteering to do Instacart pickups. I was like, oh, I'll get the groceries and that's 20 minutes in the car. I can just crank the music and just, you know. Blast something and hang out for a little bit.
I had years of neglecting myself. So this is speaking directly to what I sort of, it wasn't until the kids were, I was out of the fog, I guess, is that like early years where it just, you're juggling everything where I kind of had to reassess and, you know, start nourishing those things that made me feel balanced. Because it does, it makes you a better father. You're more patient. When you're in a better spot, you can be better prepared to react. And it's that's great advice.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to, we'll take a break for a minute. When we come back, we're talking about how fatherhood shows up on screen from TV dads and kids shows we secretly love to dad rock anthems. Don't go away. Group chat on BTPM NPR. We'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about.
Thanks for joining us again on Group Chat. I'm your guest host, Joe Cannizzaro, filling in for Bentley. And I am joined by all dads today, Adam Zyglis, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist at the Buffalo News, Rahsaan Delane, Vice President of Corporate Culture at Evergreen Health, a doctoral candidate at Syracuse University researching Black fathers raising children with autism, an advocate for LGBTQ+ and adoptive families, and Christopher Heise, Assistant Director of Creative Services at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Nice to have you here.
You guys are tough acts to follow.
Yeah, right? That's for sure. All right, so we're going to get into a couple more topics about dads and being dads and dad stuff. So let's talk about movies or TV shows that you think were really good examples of fatherhood and someone who maybe you look up to, but something, you know, just a good example of fatherhood in the media.
You know, it's funny. I mean, it could be like where I'm at in my fatherhood journey with where the kids are at and their ages. But like most of what I feel like I consume in terms of movies and shows, I don't feel like I connect with. And I think it just could be either the ages the kids are in or like where the media is at in terms of like what is entertaining or what's interesting. I feel like a lot of it tends to be a lot of stuff these days that we've been watching is like almost like wealthier families. It's like, you know, it's almost this push against this Gilded Age that we have. It's like a Great Gatsby kind of moment where there's a lot of unhappy, wealthy family dynamics. We've been, you know, and I'm like, I don't relate to any of it, but it's fascinating. You know, I mean, and a lot of it's, I feel like the teen years or like the brand new baby. I feel like I haven't consumed a lot in the, you know, 8 to 12 year old zone. And I was just talking to my friends that this is like a really great opportunity on Netflix to have like a show called like Baseball Dads or like, you know, or the travel, like to capture the craziness with that whole, that whole world. So
We did travel soccer for a little while.
Yeah.
That was wild.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I want one kid and it was wild.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole different, it's a subgenre of fatherhood.
Yeah. Yeah. And those people take it seriously, man. There's no joke in that travel soccer.
Major intensity. Yeah. Yeah. My brother has, my nephew's in travel soccer and they're at 6 to 8 different cities a year. Like it's real travel. Like our kids are 2 or 3 out of town tournaments a year, but it's year round. And I don't remember travel being this intense growing up at all. I played travel soccer, several different teams, but you know, the baseball softball situation is like, year round, indoor, outdoor.
Yeah.
You know, they have their own pitching coaches and batting coaches. It's just like,
yeah.
And then the dynamics with the drama with the parents and the coaches, it's a whole thing.
Yeah, it's not the Bad News Bears anymore, right?
No, it's not. No, it's overboard.
Yeah. Christopher, for you, media, TV dads that you like. I mean, even if you just think they're kind of...
I think, I gravitate towards Modern Family a lot. I know it's a little bit of an older show now, which is kind of wild for me to think about. But I think it was a pretty... While, it's a sitcom and it's funny, there was definitely a lot of reality baked into that. Everything wasn't perfect all the time.
Yeah.
It was very messy. It was very chaotic. And even in just 6 months, I can fully relate to like how crazy and chaotic life can be. Even with just one, I can imagine having 4, two for that matter. I mean, my wife keep thinking like, I can't imagine having more kids right now. Life would be chaos.
Yeah, that show has just shown up, and for some reason, in my TikTok algorithm, it gets showing me that all the time. And I used to watch it, when it was on, or when it started. But it's you're right. Yeah. They hit a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just the way that, especially Phil, like he was just always himself and just that sort of like almost aggressively positive and upbeat in the face of just anarchy in his household. And, I could only hope that I can retain that moving forward,
Rasan, how about you? Anybody in the media?
You know, I'm going to go back a little bit, but The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, sure.
So, that was one of my favorite shows growing up. And it resonates with me today just because of the nature of like a blended family but it's funny thinking about like how to relate to father figures in the media and how difficult it is, because even for myself and my husband, there's not a lot of representation today. Sure. And so it's kind of hard to kind of figure out kind of what we can align with, what fits. Fatherhood in general, I always go back to Fresh Prince. Like I just loved that show. And it was funny and it was engaging and there were some serious moments. And as a father today, I think about how much my fatherhood journey is that way. Like it's funny sometimes, it's scary, it's so many things. So that's my moment.
Cool. I go back a little further than that.
Okay.
I go all the way back to Happy Days.
All right.
Mr. C, Mr. Cunningham. He was a great father. He was a father to Richie, and then he ended up being a father to Fonzie, and the whole thing. So I go back to there. That was just, that's one of my favorite shows of all time. So here's a funny one. What kid shows or cartoons do maybe your kids sort of like, but you really like, and you kind of push that on them a little bit?
I mean, I feel like these days, so many of the Pixar movies are really aimed at mom and dad, like
sure,
or everybody. There's layers to them. So there's been a handful of movies that were the kids will like, but I'll feel like if they want to watch something they've already seen, I'll be like, what about like Coco, or like there's a couple movies that are like amazing movies. I don't mean to see
voluntarily watch Coco.
It was like I'm bawling at the end of that movie like a baby, and the kids are just like, that was good. Why is dad crying?
You'll understand.
I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
But there's a lot of them that aren't necessarily father like that. There's definitely some good father dynamics in that movie in particular. But in general, there's, like Zootopia, the Sing movies. There's so many entertaining movies that I may like them more than the kids. And before I got into cartooning, I was computer science and math at Canisius and wanted to go into graphic software and had a sort of a career path in my head that I could be, go into computer animation. So I always love the, checking out the new animated movies, sometimes more than the kids. And they're also in the Star Wars zone, which is not necessarily just kids, but I'm definitely more into the Star Wars than for sure my daughter, but arguably my son.
Are you pushing that on them a little bit just to get that in the
well,
house?
Well, they get hooked on it, and then we start crushing through stuff. We'll same with Harry Potter. We just went through all those. The Lord of the Rings, which again is not kids per se. So, and then at the end, they're kind of like, Dad, I think you like that more than me.
And Christopher, I know you got to, you're not putting the kid in front of the screen too much, but is there, what are you looking forward to maybe sharing with your kid at some point?
I honestly don't know yet.
But well, you got to say Sesame Street because you work here, right?
I mean, Sesame Street. No, it's funny though. This is adjacent. So we try and limit her to about 30 minutes of screen time a day, just in case, you know, we want to have a meal and have some time to ourselves. But one thing that I kind of arbitrarily picked one day to put on for her was Bob Ross.
She loves Bob Ross.
And it's very cool. Like ASMR for babies. And it's color. He's very calm. And, you know,
the voice, the whole thing. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I just kind of had it on one time and I was just got so engrossed in it. And on the weekends, his YouTube has a marathon where he just runs in one episode after the other. And before you know it, like I'm watching it and I'll turn away for a second and then the picture looks completely different. And I'm like, how did he do that? I can't believe it. You know, like I just got so invested in
it. That's a good point. It's just the little sounds.
Yeah. He was the ASMR pioneer. I will die on that hill.
True. Rasan, how about you?
It's Coco.
Coco was the one.
You can't beat it, man.
Can't. That movie is just, I mean, it's like I could watch it. You know, I'll push my kids out of the way. I need to watch Coco. I need the Coco experience. But I love it because it's in our home. We talk a lot about like generations and families and you know, the message in that story is so powerful. You know, it's a connection to generations and a little boy, you know, he feels disconnected from his family at times. And, you know, it's just a great, great movie. So it kind of walks you through these generations in a family. So I love that.
Yeah, in my house, when my daughter was younger, I found myself just in love with SpongeBob. And then Adventure Time. I don't know if you were ever watching Adventure Time.
I was into SpongeBob when they were into that. And part of why I loved it is because I loved Ren and Stimpy growing up.
Ren and Stimpy was the modern Ren and Stimpy.
Not as weird and gross, which Ren and Stimpy is the king of that. And a major influence for me.
So. Yeah, my daughter and I just watched a little section of Ren and Stimpy. And she was like, wow, this is what you did?
It's weird.
This is what you did?
It explains so many things about us, right? Yeah.
She goes, more dad lore. That's great. Yeah, and like I always try to push, not anymore, because she's 22, but like the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yes.
Get that. Oh, yeah.
You know, classic stuff. Old school stuff.
You know, you got to expose them to the 100%, classics. 100%. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Let's talk about music a little bit. There's a thing called dad rock, and I'm not exactly sure what that means. But I know in my situation, music is a big thing in my life. I was in a band for a long time. Mm-hmm. Music is huge in my world. And I tried to get that into my daughter's world. And we share a lot of different kinds of music. And you know, as we're driving around, we'll listen to Joe Strummer and Tom Waits and Slipknot and all sorts of different stuff. And we would sing along in the car together and that kind of thing. So do you have your music sort of trying to push into her world or your kids?
Right. So my kids, I grew up loving music also. Mm. I was in a couple different bands. We play guitar. And my kids, they both play cello in the orchestra, but they're my son, I gifted him a guitar, one of my first electric guitars, and he's into it. And now my daughter wants one, and she'd love it. I kind of want to get a drum kit for the house.
Wow, that's a bold,
choice.
I think I might regret it, but I mean they're at the age where we're like wanting to like you said, expose them to things this is where this came from. That's why this sound came from that. And we do the national parks. We've been doing that every year, at least one national park trip.
Oh, nice.
And a lot of times they're flights, but they're like we try to drive when we can. We went to the Great Smoky Mountains this past spring break, and it was a long car ride. So we're like, my wife and I surprised them with these Walkmans, these compact disc, like these CD players with headphones, and because you can get them new. And my wife and I both have these collections of our old CDs growing up for some reason. We never got rid of them.
Yeah.
And so we dig them out of the basement and we're like, guys, let's go through some of these and see which ones you like and we'll bring them on the car ride. So it was a cool way to see like what would translate from our era.
Yeah.
And my son, who's 11, like is really into Nirvana. And which I was, you know, I'm
there you go.
Child of the 80s and 90s. And I was definitely, you know, came of age during the grunge era. So there was, you know, we covered a lot of, you know, Pearl Jam, you know, Nirvana and all that. And my first band I was in. So yeah, he's got a couple different Nirvana albums. And I think I'm going to like give him some Soundgarden and Pearl Jam. So that's kind of the phase he's in, which is a little preteen, you know, a little bit of dark, you know.
Angst there, that's good.
Right, yeah. So my daughter's definitely more into like my, you know, like Adele and some of my, you know, my wife's, you know, collection. But yeah, they both love music and it's going to be cool to see where it goes.
Yeah, great. Christopher.
I'm very curious I mean, because my musical taste, it kind of runs the gamut. Everything from some folky stuff, progressive rock, electronic, ambient, you name it, I probably will listen to something. I'm very excited to bestow that on my daughter in one way or the other. You know, I'm a guy who still buys vinyl records. I still listen to music on iPod. I'm very much a child of the late 90s and early 2000s, and I take my iPod from my cold, dead hands, Apple. And I was just thinking about it the other day. I was kind of putting some more music onto it, and I was having a beholding. I was thinking, you know, someday this might be yours, and I hope that, you know, as I remember growing up, again, kind of flipping through my dad's CD collection, picking stuff out, and that's how I just discovered things, you know, Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin and that kind of stuff, and how someday she'll kind of be rifling through this and, oh, I wonder what this is, and kind of, you know, take a flyer on something. But the thing with dad rock, I think it's this sort of thing that, like, I don't think it's really up for us to label, because it's when I think of dad rock, what you might think of dad rock isn't what you would call dad rock. It's what your dad listened to or something. You know, like, I just saw a reel on Instagram the other day, and it was Mr. Rogers, and he was in front of a record player, and he was like, here's a song I used to listen to. And he put Neil down, but somebody then piped in L.I.T., Please Tell Me Why. And it was really, it was this kind of funny juxtaposition. I'm thinking, you know, that's not an old song. That's eighth grade. Oh man, I am old. So people would think, you know, younger generations would think of that as like old music, but it's not, you know.
So, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rasan.
I grew up in a house where James Brown was playing all the time. Bob Marley was playing all the time.
Nice.
A lot of 70s soul music. So when my kids were babies, we used to play the music throughout the house, and so they kind of got used to it. And as they grew older, they love that type of music now. They love Bob Marley. They can sing at least 3 or 4 Bob Marley songs.
Wow.
And, you know, we were intentional because his music is all about, like, love, and it's about, you know, social justice and all these things that that we want them to really understand, and the people that we want them to be. And then our oldest son, Keenan, is very much into, like, musicals and plays. And so he loves, like, Wicked. He loves The Wiz. He loves... You know, he loves that genre of music. So he loves The Wiz so much. There was a Wiz Live a couple of years ago that was on TV. And Mary J. Blige, who's one of my favorite R&B artists, played Eveline, if you know the characters in The Wiz. But and he loves her. So he loves Mary J. Blige. He loves Diana Ross. He knows everything about them. So it's just interesting to see, like, their journey through, you know, through what I grew up listening to and kind of what we play in home and what they kind of latch on to.
Yeah, right. It kind of plays really cool. Each other.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it. Dad rock is in your dad's too. Like, so like my parents, I got a bunch of their, like, vinyl and you know, Led Zeppelin, Bob Marley, you know, Fleetwood Mac, like, and I went through and listened to what stuff I like. We kept that, and then we're buying records, you know, that are current records. So we do have a record player that we will, that's their source to get, you know, grandpa's rock, you know, in a way. So it's like, dad rock, and then there's, like, you know, there's grandpa rock. So.
But
you know, it's all cyclical. You know, this genre's kind of come in and out. A lot of that folky stuff we listen to that my wife and I love has a very 70s vibe often, you know, so a lot of it goes in circles.
Rasan, are you going to introduce instruments? Have they played? Do your kids play instruments? Are you going to go down that road? My daughter started playing piano when she was like 3 and a half.
Really?
And she still plays to this day.
Yeah.
She loves it. It's a great thing. But do you have?
We have aspirations of doing it for sure. Our youngest son, he loves playing. My husband knows how to play the organ and the piano.
Nice.
So he's kind of teaching them the basics.
Yeah.
And then our oldest daughter, she wants to play the flute, so we're starting that process.
Nice.
Yeah.
Better than
so
the drums, though, right?
Yes.
It's already noisy enough.
Right? A lot of it can sound painful. I remember when my daughter first started, she played violin for a while, too. That was a rough beginning. But it's you know.
Violin's tough, yeah.
Yeah, but once they start to get it. And then,
yes.
Like, there was a time when, you know, my daughter was playing the piano, and you're going to lessons, trying not to make them too intense. And then there was that time where she just sat by herself at the piano and just started playing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, that's it right there.
Right.
You know? She likes
it. It's coming together.
Yeah, it's all coming together. And you'll hear, like, you know, she plays a trumpet now, and she picks that up every once in a while.
Yeah.
And Christopher, what do you have thoughts on? I mean, I know you're only 6 months, but. You know,
I mean, my wife and I definitely, we're a big music family.
Mm-hmm.
I have guitars and basses hanging on my walls at home.
Yeah.
You know, I play piano too. My wife went to school for vocal performance. So, like, we're definitely.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So, we're definitely going to introduce music as soon as we can. You know, we, even at 6 months, we'll play a lot of music around the house and just kind of dance and bounce around to the beat just so she can kind of instinctively learn how to count to four and do that kind of thing. Because I think that that's important that they learn even at a subconscious level to kind of understand rhythm and music and that kind
just
of
love
stuff.
Music.
So as soon as we can, I'm going to start giving her instruments.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, so we're going to move on a little bit. When we come back from the break, we're talking about what dads really want for Father's Day, whether it's peace and quiet, which is usually my go-to, power tools or just a good laugh, and the funny, heartfelt stories that make fatherhood unforgettable. Group chat on BTPM NPR. We'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out Group Chat, our new pop culture show on WBFO that talks about what you're talking about each week. Music, movies, food, technology, arts, culture, and more. And we want to know what's on your mind. Join the chat by dropping us an email at groupchat@wbfo.org. We welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions on what you want us to talk about.
Welcome back to Group Chat. I'm your guest host, Joe Cannizzaro, filling in for Bentley because it's dads only today. And I'm joined by three great dads, Adam Zyglis, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist at the Buffalo News, Rasan Delane, Vice President of Corporate Culture at Evergreen Health, a doctoral candidate at Syracuse University researching Black fathers raising children with autism, an advocate for LGBTQ+ and adoptive families, and Christopher Heisey, Assistant Director of Creative Services here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Welcome back, guys. So, Rasan, we'd just like to dig in just a little bit. This is really interesting. You're at Syracuse University researching Black fathers raising children with autism.
Yes.
That sounds so rewarding, so fascinating. Like, what do you got going on there?
The story begins with, at 18 months, our oldest son, Keenan, was diagnosed with autism. Mm. And at the time, we were trying to figure out what that meant and what that experience was going to be.
Sure.
And as a Black father, as someone who's in a same-sex marriage, there's a lot of kind of questions that we had around what that would be like, and kind of how we would raise him, what services he would need, the supports he would need. And what ended up happening was, as I was kind of trying to figure out in my educational journey what I wanted my dissertation to be, it made sense that I would do something and engage in a project that was passionate to me and also contributed to the field of research around autism and fatherhood and that sort of thing. So so really it came from my personal experience. And then, you know, digging into the research, what I found was that oftentimes fathers aren't as existent in the research around parenting children with autism. Mm. They're typically focus a lot on mothers and the mothering experience. And then kind of digging in a little bit deeper, Black fathers are even less existent in the research. And so because I had that lived experience, it made sense to me that that was non-existent. Yeah. So I needed to take that on as a project. And autism is a very, very unique and complex neurodevelopmental disorder that kind of shows up differently for different people. If you know one person with autism, they say you know one person with autism because it is very unique to the person who's experiencing it. Hmm. And raising a young Black boy with autism is also very unique because he sits in multiple spaces. He's a Black child. Yeah. He's a Black boy. He has autism. He's raised by two dads. There's a number of different things that he experiences and will experience in his life. So, so I wanted to make sure that fathers like me were able to tell their stories and that we could contribute to some research that really wasn't there. Wow. So I'm really excited about going through that process and really being able to highlight voices that haven't really been heard. But,
that's amazing. Yeah, that's very cool.
Thank you.
How are dads portrayed in the media? Like, what do you guys think? I know from what it seems to me like dads are kind of like they're not home a lot. They're always angry when they're home. I mean, sometimes I'm angry when I'm home, but you know, I did a lot. When my kid was little, I was changing diapers all night. I was up, you know what I mean? I don't think that side of dad is quite portrayed the way it should be. I mean, I was pretty hands-on and I still am. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I think it's generational and depends on the media source. In terms of, I've definitely seen some Netflix shows or series that did, I can't think of them specifically, but that would capture more of the modern dynamic of, you know, co-parenting, pretty equally, and kind of moving away from that traditional role of dad just not being there a lot and, not being emotionally available.
Right.
And there's still a component of that in a lot of shows that you see, I think, because there's still an element of that, especially in older generational fathers. But I do think it's been positive to see that sort of go away a little bit. But I think what's troubling to me is I think we're in a political climate that is shifting. And I think the modern dad and modern version of masculinity is a little bit in flux. And I think, you know, years ago we had this idea that this toxic masculinity was a problem. And, you know, growing up when I was younger, you know, you got to be tough. You got to be, don't talk about your feelings. You know, to be a man, you have to be strong and controlling and all that, which is pretty toxic. And, you know, never really identified with that. And by the time you kind of break away from it, you know, this idea of being emotionally available, you can show strength without having to control anything, you can show strength with patience and with kindness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is a newer version of masculinity, but there is a political movement, you know, right now to sort of, you know, that has this sort of podcast bro culture where it's cool again to not be empathetic, to be, you know, overly concerned with yourself, and to be, you know, a little bit more macho. So I think that's a little bit concerning for in terms of raising boys. So our focus as parents are to really raise a kind, compassionate, sweet boy.
Yeah.
That will become a man that will be kind and compassionate and strong. Mm. And I think that's, you got to do your own thing and make your own culture within your family.
Yeah.
Regardless of what's happening in the media landscape or where things are at. But I do think there is a little bit of that, those concepts are kind of in flux right now.
It's interesting because when you know, my daughter's adopted, and when she first came along, my wife and I were trying to figure out how we're going to raise this, you know, like, and we just said from the beginning, we just want to raise a good person.
Right.
Yep.
Everything else will just fall in line.
Yep.
And it really has down the line. That's all we wanted to do. We could, you know, she could be, her grades could stink. It'll all come together in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just a good person, you know?
Right.
So Christopher, what do you think about the toxic masculinity in the world, and how are you going to approach your,
I mean, I think to Adam's point, I think there's definitely room for people to oppose the toxic masculinity. I think, you know, if I had to kind of sum up one thing in the last 6 months, is that it's okay to not be okay. And I think that there's definitely a lot of pressure, especially on men, to be the fixer, to be the one who has to be strong all the time. But I learned very early on that that's not always the case.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just aren't, and it's okay to kind of embrace that you can't be 100% all the time.
Yep.
But I think there's also, you know, juxtaposed with that, I think that there is a stigma about men and mental health and new fathers and mental health. There's a huge stigma against fathers and their mental health, and that they're just supposed to assumed to be the rock, and that, you know, they have to be the supportive one constantly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very thankful that my wife doesn't see it that way, and we both lean on each other. You know, sometimes she's my rock, sometimes I'm her rock, and I think that's certainly how we've navigated the storm of the last 6 months is just being able to lean on each other.
So, Rasan, you have a very different dynamic for you. What's your take on all that, man?
You know, I think it's interesting because there's so many myths about fatherhood that just kind of are so ingrained in our culture and in our society. And my husband and I think we represent something that's different. You know, two men raising, we have two boys and two girls, so we have we're split right down the middle, which is an interesting experience. And I think what we've learned very early on was we were very intentional about, like, I'll take the example of the books that we bought for them and the things that we would read to them that were like, you know, about different types of families, about, you know, how to express your emotions.
Yeah.
There's one book that I love that's called All Bodies Are Cool. And it just kind of talks about, you know, the spectrum of bodies. And there's so many things that are interconnected to masculinity that I think often don't get talked about enough, that kind of build and hopefully build, at least for us, what we're working on is really that empathy, you know, that our kids will have for other people.
Sure.
And I also think that oftentimes, like, men and boys are centered in the conversation. And which is important. And, you know, young girls and young women also are important to talk about in terms of masculinity, understanding masculinity.
Yeah.
you know, raising two daughters, I think so much about how we talk to our boys about, you know, just being good, expressing your emotions and talking about your feelings and how they will observe those interactions between my husband and I and our boys, and what messaging that says to them around, you know, the type of men that they may interact with or, you know, how they express their emotions themselves. So there's so many different ways in which I think masculinity is tied to these different experiences that they're about boys and girls.
So Father's Day is coming up. Today's Friday. Father's Day is in a couple days. So what do you... And I always joke with my family, I just want you to leave me alone just a couple hours. Like, I'm just, please, just let me be. But what are you looking forward to on Father's Day?
Yeah, so I mean, for me, being outside, getting away from technology, you know, even getting away from the city, just really connecting with nature, whether it's a hike, bike ride. So that's kind of my MO.
Nice.
With Father's Day. And yeah, I don't need gifts or anything like that. The time and space is also welcome.
Yeah,
you know? But watching them and kind of relaxing outside in some nice weather, that'd be perfect.
That's beautiful. Christopher, this is your first, right?
It will be my first.
Wow.
Yeah.
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 So what do you want, peace and quiet?
I want nothing. You know, I our life right now, every day is like a treadmill that someone's just kind of slowly turning up on you.
Yep.
And I'm just looking forward to a day of just relaxing, not having anywhere to go, nothing to do, just... Yeah. Time.
Nice.
Time with my wife, time with my daughter. Yep. It's all I'm looking forward to.
Great.
Yeah.
Rasan.
Same. I mean, it's really just quality time and just sharing space together, eating, you know, having fun, laughing, like just the simple things really make it memorable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's all I'm looking forward to.
Cool. Yeah. I know for the past few years, you know, my daughter's given me gift certificates and cool little presents and all that stuff. But what we've been doing is the neighbors they put a pool up and they installed a fence. And my daughter and I, we go out on Father's Day and we stain the fence together. Mm-hmm. And it's just we're just out listening to some music and joking and laughing.
Simple.
And it's a few hours out there with her. And then my wife and I and my daughter will go for a walk, do like Reinstein or something, look at birds.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. But it's just you know, and what's that, you know, $30 for a can of stain. And it's just, you know, it's memories. You have
doing something together.
Yeah. Yeah. Any funny little gifts that your kids have gotten you over the years? Or just really special, just, you know, that sticks in your head.
Well, recently, our youngest daughter, she graduated from kindergarten.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so in the kindergarten celebration, which was really cute, they each kid did like a journal that they did throughout the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me this journal, and it was just the most beautiful thing because it was... You know, every page was a representation of the family. Like, we did this weekend, Dad and Daddy did this, and Grandma, and, you know, Nana and Grand-Grand, which are my parents.
Mm.
But it was just a beautiful gift, you know, because it just showed, like, how much she loves her family and how we show up, like, in her memories and throughout the course of her school year. So so that was really special to me.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. If your kids wrote a bio about you one day, what's like one moment or one instance that you think that would really stick out?
I put them in cartoons, and I think they love that. You know, I put them in like a forward to my book that I had, which on Buffalo stuff. But
And Rasan, if you could, you know, some moment that sticks out that would be for your bio from your kids, what do you think that might be?
It probably would be maybe a series of moments.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think. That's what it would be for me too.
You know, just the maybe the first time of something.
Mm.
You know that they each accomplish. That I was there, I was present, or that they could call me, or you know, they shared their experience with, you know, with me and my husband. So so I think like those first moments over time. There may be some things I don't want to know about, but, you know, but at least maybe they call me and say like, hey, this is what happened. I want you know, whatever. But I think those moments over time, you know, I would love for that to be a part of that story.
That's great. What are you hoping for?
The firsts. And I hope that they're as impactful and influential as the firsts that I remember. I think that's a really important thing for me.
That's great.
Yeah.
So that kind of wraps this up. So thanks, guys. That was fantastic. Happy Father's Day to y'all.
Thank you.
If you're first one, hope you have a good one. Yeah. That wraps up today's episode of Group Chat for now. If you want to continue the conversation, make sure you follow us on Instagram at BTPMNPR. Also, check us out on the video podcast on Buffalo Toronto Public Media's YouTube channel. And very importantly, in this day that we're in right now, if you love public media, please protect it and stand with us. All right, so I would like to thank my guests, Adam Zyglis, Rahsaan Delane, and Christopher Heise. I'm your guest host, Joe Cannizzaro. Have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day, and thanks for listening.